A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Welcome to episode 82 of The Nero Show. In today's episode,
we do a deep dive into the price and performance of the new third wave of Chinese brand carbon frames.
I consider walking back the one bike to rule it all hatred. What does Jesse think?
We have a look at the Shanghai Bike Show and which brands are going to cut through to our Western market.
And how stiff is too stiff? We're talking shoes. All right, let's get into it. All right, just when you thought China was disappointing, there was nothing coming out of there, Joe sneaks about the Shanghai Bike Show and I can officially say blows my mind. Blows my mind. And we have once again been smashed with, there's a few brands here I've never even heard of, let alone products I've never even heard of. Okay, maybe we go through them a little bit, but I think you've got like an overall take to this as
well. Yeah, I wanted to really go into what is, I'm calling the third wave.
The third wave
of Chinese carbon road bikes. It's hitting us 2024. I wanted to go into it because it's a new coming in at the mid to upper level. These brands are popping up, and I want to do a whole deep dive on it and give my thoughts on it. Because the other thing is, well, the prices of them are coming up, and it's a whole new discussion now around what are you willing to pay for a Chinese carbon frame.
So the first wave being just the
are we going to go into it?
Well,
yeah. All right, let's go. Okay, so first wave being back in the day, which was your open mold frame.
Right.
So your light carbon, your Deng Fu, you know, sort of 2010 to 2016, which was
your
really
Cinerello type things.
Yeah, your AliExpress, but not because they weren't brands. It was just, I know I'm going to go by this open mold frame, and it was kind of guys on forums, and there wasn't really any testing of them. Again, they weren't brands. They were just manufacturers, and that was the first wave, and they were freaking cheap.
Yes.
Then the second wave was the branded version of a Chinese carbon frame, which was still kind of a similar frame, but just with a brand. And that's come up until about this year. And that was your brands like Elves, like Yolio.
Windspace?
Windspace I put in there too. So these were brands, so they had a bit of a name behind them. The thing with these frames were that they were never marketed to compete with a Western frame, with a Cannondale, with a Specialized. They were always generally perceived as really good value, but not competing with the Western frames. So there would generally be things like, it's an aero-looking frame, like the Elves Falith Evo, but there's not really any testing of it, and they're a bit heavy, and the ride quality from some accounts wasn't really amazing, but it was a really good deal, and if you like the look of it, you'd probably still go there. Or it was a super light frame, so you could still get some really light ones out there. But they'd never seen a wind tunnel. They'd never done any CFD. So they're good for a weight weenie build, but they didn't really compete with the Western brands for that. And that was that. That's the second wave, what we've seen. Now, what we're seeing is the third wave. And that's the brands that we're seeing. So we've got here the Seeker Spear. We've got the Tavello Arrow, the new one. All these brands that we're seeing now that are, firstly, a brand. Secondly, are doing, again, you can go down a rabbit hole of, are they actually faster or lighter, but they're doing some degree of point. Wind tunnel yes. testing. They're marketed. They've also got some marketing behind them too. So generally like a Chinese domestic team will be riding them, or they'll have influencers or people from the West on them. And they're just covering more bases. So they're directly marketed as good or better than any Western brand's frame. And that's the third wave. That's the 2024. That's what we're seeing. We saw it Shanghai. And that's what I'm talking about. We're saying this third wave of Chinese frames is the competitor to the West. And that's kind of what I've been waiting for.
It's. I know you want to dive into some comparisons and sort of pull out some of the specifics of this.
Yep.
My only kind of comment on what you've sort of said so far was I kind of wondered what the catalyst of this was, because everything seemed to be kind of trucking along happily with these. Are we calling them brands in the second wave? I suppose we are.
Yep. Yeah.
But they were happy, sort of in their place. But seemingly there's been a new push, or there's been more investment, or a different – what I actually think it is they're chasing a different market, and that market seems to be, from all accounts, this Chinese domestic market. So most of those brands that you just discussed, even in Joe's video, he's talking about this frame, this model will be available domestically in China by this year.
Apparently it's coming to market in China this year, but won't come to market in the West until next year.
So for me, it looks like the driving force behind this is they're trying to get out in front of the Western brands domestically, leave the Western brands behind when it comes to this emerging cyclist in China, and be really well placed to hit them up. And the benefit from our perspective is they seem to be trying to hit the same marks that the Western brands have been doing, like you said, doing the testing. Like it just looks more legit. The product looks more realistic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So look, there's some brands in here that I've never heard of. Seller Bikes, Quick Pro, Honorary. Like, yeah, it just.
Oh, there's a whole heap of them. Now, I do want to. Again, the downside of this, and this is the question mark for people in the US, for people in Australia, for people in Europe, Canada, now that you've got these third wave of Chinese carbon bikes, is are people willing to spend 1,800 US, 2,000 US on a Chinese carbon bike?
Because this is the key point. That's of the third crux. Wave. They're more expensive, right?
Yes. Yep. So the question remains, are people going to be willing to pay this? And that's what I want to get your opinion on, Chris. So before we go down, we actually need to let's run through some of the bikes in particular so we can kind of know what we're talking about. And if we're on the video, probably put some photos up. The main one that's just been released that we've seen a lot is the Seeker Spear. So Seeker. People might recognize them because they did that Factor Austro lookalike frame. They had the Seeker Exceed.
Exceed, yeah.
So one, I think Cam Nichols did a video on it and that was out. So they've released a new bike called the Seeker Spear, and it's more of an all-rounder. I'm calling it the Cannondale Super 6 China version. I just like to pick a lookalike. So that's kind of what this is looking at. It's got a really interesting seat tube junction, which they say saves a few watts. And by say saves a few watts is they've tested this in the UK.
Yep.
That is a really big deal for a Chinese brand.
I don't think I've heard of a Chinese brand doing that.
Nope.
No.
Yeah. That's
CFD. That's, yep. CFD to the cows come home, but actually, yeah, take it to a wind tunnel. That's a new one.
And done it in so it was done and tested in Silverstone Sports Engineering's wind tunnel in collaboration with AeroCoach, another Western brand. So that I think that's good. I mean, whether you really care about this data or trust the data, it doesn't actually matter, because we're talking about the perception of the brand in the market, and this is what the brands need to get higher sales in the West at least, and probably also in China.
Well, rail is tiny bit, but I had this exact discussion during the week with someone in Centennial Park. We're doing laps, they're building a bike up, and I suggested they were down to the point of, right, I'm going to select wheels for my bike. I think they'd decided to go for. I can't remember at the time, but and I started suggesting the wind space wheels and this sort of thing. And the guy just turns to me and goes, "None of these things have ever seen a wind tunnel." So it is. It is a thing that people, they just want to see almost that box ticked at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And that's what we're seeing with this third wave of frame. So what is it? It's an all-rounder. They say they've done testing here compared to in the wind tunnel, compared to a Tarmac SL8, which is pretty interesting. They say the drag is, I'm not going to go into the details. They say it's very competitive aerodynamically. They've tested it with that funky thing they're doing with the seat tube junction. They say that saves 3 watts on average at 40 kilometer an hour. Okay. So it's been tested. The weight's competitive of it. That's what we're looking at there with the Seeker Spear. The other one that's is lacking some details, but it's the one that I'll be riding. That's the Tavello Arrow. So that's gone up without details on Panda Podium. So we've got pricing on it and we've got photos of it. So what I want to ask you, we're going to go through some hypotheticals, is would you buy them at the price point that they're priced at? So I've got a couple of scenarios I want to talk you through. First one, related to the Seeker Spear. We're going to stay, in this example, we're going to say in Australian dollars. Chris Miller is doing a road bike build. He wants to pick the starting point for the build. He needs a frame set. In Australia, the regular version of the Seeker Spear, they've got two versions. Sorry, I'll just quickly add. The other thing we're seeing from these brands is doing a higher grade carbon version. So the Tavello Arrow and the Seeker Spear both come with a lighter weight option, which is what we see from the Western brands. Again, it's just more solidifying them as a quality competitor, I guess. But so we're going to say the regular version of the Seeker Spear, which is $3,149 Australian dollars. The Cannondale Super 6 Evo High Mod is $6,599. Where do you, how are those numbers? I've got some other examples, but how are those numbers sitting with you as a starting point?
That's a really compelling argument to go to the Seeker. I got to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's really compelling given what you could then add to that bike and still be $3,000 in front. Yeah. That's a super compelling argument. I'd have to go that route. I really do at this point.
In that situation as well, my opinion, I'd have to agree. I think that's a pretty compelling saving there. Okay, other one. The Tavello, and we're going to go change over to US dollars just for comparison's sake. The Tavello Arrow, regular version again, $1,880. Tarmac SL8, regular version, $3,500. Giant Propel Advanced Pro, $2,700. Windspace T1550, $1,780.
I'd choose the Propel.
Yep.
I'd then have to seriously consider. From there, it becomes very difficult.
Mm-hmm. So you'd pay the extra $1,000 roughly. US dollars to get the Propel.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What about you on that one?
This is where it gets trickier because you're going.
I see what you've done here, by the way. You've put four bikes that do have a very similar sort of kind of silhouette to them. Like, yeah, that's a really, really good comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you can see where I'm going here. In that, because the prices are creeping up closer to that $2,000 for the regular version, a couple hundred more for the upgraded version, it is a harder proposition to sell. And that's the honest. Especially as well, that's not even this is the third wave frames, which are a bit more expensive. There are still even then the cheaper options. So I'll bring them up just for comparison. So the Oleo R12 is about $1,500 with a handlebar. Everything else I've discussed prior doesn't come with a handlebar. And the Elves Falleth without a handlebar is $1,100. I'm not really bringing them into this conversation because...
Second wave bikes,
because they're second wave. That's second wave. No, they've still ticked the box for a lot of people, but I don't think an Elves Falleth is competing with a giant Propel Advanced Pro. The third wave frames should be competing up there. So that's why I'm not I'm putting them in there. So that's an I'm probably going to say in that comparison, I probably would be picking a giant Propel that you can get, you know, for an extra $1,000 US. Okay. Yep. And, you know, I'm still probably saying I'm not making the leap between $2,000 US to $3,500 US to get a tarmac, a specialized tarmac. I'm probably going the Windspace or the Tavelo.
What I reckon is really interesting here is, so there's the next step up on that Seeker spear. So yes. What are they called? The RDC. So
yep.
Essentially that's $4,000. Now, there's a few things going on here. I've noticed that local distributors are actually getting a little mitts in on this. And so the third wave, if we're calling it, might also limit the direct-to-consumerness of yes. some of these products as yep. the local distributors, which have their pros and cons because then you've got, you know, your local person to go back to, blah, blah, blah. But they add their price. They yep. They take their little ticket out. So I think Kaish in Australia have got it for $4,000. $4,000, Jesse,
well,
for a Asian cheap, quote-unquote, yeah. brand.
So if we go back to that first comparison, are you going to spend $4,000 on the top-level Seeker Spear RDC or pay $2,500 more and you're on a Cannondale Super 6 as written in the World Tour? That's, you know, that's a tough sell. That is,
well, this is
getting more difficult.
Play. Really, this is kind of what Factor did. They just went, okay, well, we're a premium brand. Prove us wrong. We're going to charge premium numbers for our one model that you can buy, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. This is a big brain move by them to, and it does it. I hate to say it, and this is probably not just me, but there are a lot of people out there that see a big number like that. Oh wow, it's more than a giant. Oh, they must have really got their act together. They must have, you know, all of a sudden the premiumness of the bike goes up just simply because they're charging more. And I don't say that as a good thing or a bad thing. It's probably a bad thing. But this is a big move. Much easier for a brand like Seeker to do this than a brand like Yoleo. Or Elves to suddenly, I mean, Elves would be essentially doubling the price of their premium frame.
Yep.
To try and do this.
Oh yeah, yes. Although I think my overall just to spoil is I think the Chinese brands need this to cut through. They'll never, if you stick in the second wave, no, you're always just going to be bought by, you know, people on forums. It's never going to cut through. So. Yes, you know, the price is going up. If you start going through with distributors and retailers, the price is going to go up again. And there will be I for people that frustrates, I'm sympathetic to that, but I think to see more of these bikes on the road, that this needs to happen. So
I agree with you.
I'm a fan of it. So, okay, I've got a couple other points on this. Now, we've been talking there about the retail price of the Western brands. Unfortunately, you're basically, you're getting 20% off as soon as it's the next model year. So no one's really, it's not that hard to get a specialized tarmac frame from the previous year at not that $3,500 US price. So then it gets even more interesting because you're actually getting quite close to the sale price of a Western Brands frame from the previous year. I do want to bring that up. So this leaves the question is, well, overall, what percent of a Western brand's price do we think people are willing to pay? And I want to use the carbon wheels as an example because we've already seen this play out
yes.
with wheels because the wheel market is already third wave. It's done. It's settled in.
Yep.
So we can use that as an example. Now, let's go through some wheel prices and we can see what sort of percents they're sitting at. So Windspace Hypers, we're talking US dollars, $1,500. Elite Drives, $1,200. Magines, $1,200. CRWs, Works. $1,700. So you're kind of in that, let's call it $1,500 range average. Western brand wheels, $2,400 for DT Swiss. Dura-Ace, $2,100. The KDEX Max 40s, they're $4,000. Envy's are $2,850. Zips are just over $2,000. So let's average it out. Actually, let's say the Chinese wheels, let's average 1,300. Name brand wheels, 2,500. On average, going from a Western brand wheels to a semi-equivalent Chinese brand wheels, about half the price. And people seem quite happy to pay that half the price. They're not going, oh, I want this for a quarter of the price.
Mm.
Seems like if you can get them for half the retail price, people are pretty happy with that in the wheel space. And so I think that's what we're probably going to be looking at for these Western brands is half price. So again, Cannondale Super 6 Evo High Mods, 6.5. Aussie. Chinese brand can probably charge up to 3,200 and people will accept that. Tarmac SL8, $3,500. So you're kind of looking at 1,700 US. And that's kind of the margin. As soon as you start going above half, that's where I think it's going to be a difficult sell.
Looking at that, it's really hard to convince yourself to go the big Western brands in that particular market. I mean,
if you're, but the thing is, a lot of people these days aren't building from scratch.
No, and that's where I was kind of headed.
Yeah.
Is the play the big brands have left is the package.
Yes,
that's their last play here. You know, If I take those reserve wheels off the S5, it will just immediately get slower because it's not the package.
Oh, you're going that angle.
Well,
oh,
I think.
No, I, th- oh, I you thought think you were just, saying for the value because oh, you can't beat a Merida fully built with OEM price yes, group set.
Yes.
It's just not, it's done.
That's true.
So I thought you were going more that angle in that.
Both.
Yeah. They
both.
Can,
essentially, yeah, yes. I mean, when it comes from the brand, it's got all of it on there. But then you can also potentially play that little extra of, the frame was designed to work with these wheels, so then you have to do that as well. It's kind of is the last play though. If you are trying to flog your wheel brands as well, that's kind of.
Okay. I mean, they can try.
Or maybe it's not a lose-lose. Like if you're a company that owns your wheel brand, like Giant and Cervelo, maybe it's not that big a deal. But for the mainstream wheel brands that are just wheel brand manufacturers like Envy and Zip, maybe it is a slightly sort of dodgier surface to run on then.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to just set this out now for this third wave of frames just to make my point. Because there are going to be people that balk at paying $1,800 for a Chinese brand frame.
Yep.
And they go, why would I pay that? I was paying $900 on AliExpress. Or I was paying $1,000 for an Elves. I mean, yeah, I think they have a point. I'm just saying, up again, if we're kind of using that up to about $2,000, if it's one of these newer frames that has testing behind it, and you're going to... Hopefully a better layup that actually, they're going to have to be reviewed and things like that. I think they're still within a reasonable price based on that, but we'll see.
I mean, I think this is ultimately a good thing.
Yeah.
It has to be.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, you're seeing better products, hopefully more accessible, though that hasn't exactly been proved correct as yet. Potentially Joe Panda Podium can solve some of that stuff. But, yeah, that's kind of where we're at. But can I just mention some of the other stuff that
let's
saw?
Yeah.
So Magine do a group set now?
Yeah.
What the hell?
Oh, yeah.
Where did that come from? Like, that just dropped out of nowhere. Oh, yeah, we're doing an electronic group set. Oh, there'll be a rim brake one as well. Yep, no probs. Okay, all good. Yeah, here it is. This is it shifting. Like, okay, right. So, and it's a... Okay, so it was a DI2 12-speed type setup, so the wireless shifters with a wired battery to the front derailleur, and then those were wired.
Okay.
12-speed. Cool. 12-speed. Right. Good.
Can I just make one? I made this point before, and I just want to double down again, is that if Joe at Panda Podium can do full builds, and you spec them there. And so you go Chinese frame, you're saving half the cost. You're buying a Chinese group set DI2, which is probably a third of the price. And he can send it out built so you don't have to go and pay a mechanic. It's going to be better performance. It's going to be the same performance and it's going to be cheaper price than a direct consumer Canyon.
I was just thinking
and
that.
You can then customize if he's building it and you can then customize the parts so you're not getting some crank length you don't want and some handlebars you don't want. That will
blow up.
It will destroy the direct to consumer because why would I go and buy some stock bike for the same price with a whole bunch of parts I don't want? If I can get it built up with a Magine group set, with a Seeker frame, exactly how I want it, and it comes built, that will be the. That's it. That's it. That's and I will. Sing
did
it.
Did you see the S5 one? So it was the honorary aero bike.
Yep.
Because I've been calling for that. Like, why isn't anyone making an S5 ripoff? Basically, and it was. It was an S5 ripoff. Like, yeah, if I could order that with my Cybray cranks.
Yes.
And okay, another sorry, just random one. L2 USB-C charging. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Oh, my God. Fantastic. Yeah. Well done. I mean, obviously that's the big move eventually is to make those builds feasible, but there's obviously so much logistics around that bringing in. Anyway, hopefully we'll chat to him soon enough to have that discussion. Yeah. Is there any particular model or bike that
– I did have a laugh at this.
There is one for me.
Oh, we're probably going to say on the Stella. It was Stella, not Stella. The Stella bikes.
Yeah.
That had the Trek Madone before Trek ever. The Trek Madone before the Trek Madone. And like that. I mean, it's basically a slimmed down Madone with the funky ISO speed cutout thing, the hole, the triangle.
Did you try and find that brand on the web?
No.
Can't find them anywhere.
No. Well, it's a Fast. So it's Fast Sports.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's their new bike arm, which is, mark my words, is going to look remarkably like the Trek Madone, but we're seeing it before the Trek Madone.
Correct.
So that's kind of funny.
The honorary S5 ripoff for me was probably one of the highlights.
Yeah.
Though that Quick Pro was another brand that I was not aware of that just seemed to make every style of bike known under the sun. And he showed a climbing bike that was like a sub 600 gram frame set. Just okay, fine. There we go. There's another one painted. Mm-hmm. Good. So I don't know. It just had me buzzing again watching that stuff.
Yeah, it did. Same.
Where are you with all the little trinkets? Like the super light. Cassettes and the bar end things. Does that get you going? I don't see that being a big Jesse coil.
No. It's like, how long is that cassette going to last? Yeah. It's like, it's 130 grams. And you're like, well, is it 5,000K and it's toast? Has anyone tested it? And that's why I start to go, ooh, like, it's kind of interesting, but I'd probably just stick with the Shimano for now. But maybe I'm a dinosaur, but I mean, that kind of stuff, all that, if you really went through and changed the through axles, changed the bar end plugs, changed the cassette, I mean, that stuff adds up.
Yeah.
Get us some super light saddle. Yeah. But then you're also kind of like, well, what does that do to the shifting performance?
That's my
sort
of thing.
I don't know.
With a lot of the sort of trinkety things, as soon as you start tinkering with, like, the system, ultimately, like I'm even really bad with chains. Like I tend to like putting the brand chains on there, which is, I know, very old school of it. You should be running something new and boutique, but yeah, mostly brands. Yeah. Quick word from today's show partner, micronutrition brand, Pillar Performance. Traditional nutrition products like hydration and carbohydrates will take you through to the finish line, whereas Pillar's mission is to get you to the start line in the best condition over and over.
In this episode, Pillar wants to bring awareness to the benefits that magnesium supplementation can have for you as a cyclist, particularly as it relates to sleep and recovery. Do you have trouble getting to sleep each night, or do you suffer from reduced sleep quality, particularly after your biggest training days? If so, magnesium...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Supplementation can help improve all areas of your sleep by regulating melatonin production and reducing cramps that interrupt your sleep quality. Pillar's Triple Magnesium is a 300 milligram blend of absorbable forms of magnesium that tastes great and is Inform Sport batch tested to be free from banned ingredients.
If you would like to try Pillar today, get 15% off by using code Nero at pillarperformance.shop, or for North American viewers, head to thefeed.com/pillar and enter code Nero for 15% off. Just very briefly, Jesse, because I know neither of us have been that excited by what's going on with the World Tour at the moment, but Giro has started. And for the first time, I reckon there's a slight little undercurrent of Poggy. Because to this point, Poggy's always had this sort of shine about him where he's the golden child, you know, him versus Jonas. The neutral observer, let's be honest, would have been cheering for Poggy because he's, you know, he's the character. He's, you know, a bit more of a chirpy, interesting guy. I've just noticed with this Giro that there seems to be a little twist in that narrative of, oh God, he's just not you again. So you just sort of sit back and you kind of hear the little murmurings of it. I know, what do you think? Do you think he can't be the poster child forever of the new wave of cyclists? Like at some point there'll be a bit of a backlash to it. What do you reckon?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just more of a fact that there's no other competition. He's just so, at the Giro at least, he's so far ahead. But no,
Okay, well, what about fast forward to the Tour this year?
Yeah.
Where do you think what's the media narrative there? Is it going to be, oh, Poggy, can he do the double? You know, because there tends to be a wave of like, support one way or another for these things. And it's mostly been behind him to this date. Do you think he maintains that at the Tour, or because of Jonas's bad crash, do you think that narrative changes and it becomes, oh, Jonas could win three? Oh my God, this would be amazing if he came back from being injured and that sort of thing.
I don't know what's happened to me, Chris. I don't care. I just don't. Something's happened to me.
It's the crashing,
I don't know what's happening. Is it?
I think it's the crashing.
I know you're saying things and I'm hearing them and I watch the highlights of the stage. I just don't, like, I don't know. I don't know what, if it's just this season. I'm kind of probably get excited for the Tour, but I don't know.
Because normally I could.
I don't have an angle. Yeah. My brain is like, there's just birds twerping. I don't know.
I would suggest that you are probably in the majority, Jesse. I don't disagree. I don't think
I
you need to be ashamed of that.
I feel, I'm trying to entertain the topic and I'm trying to, I just, Poggy, yeah, he's, you know, there's no competition, so he's going to go and destroy the race and that makes everyone go, it makes him the enemy because everyone wants an underdog. So, yeah, I mean, I get it. I don't know. And then Jonas has crashed and then is he going to make it to the Tour? And then, okay, he'll be undercooked a bit. I don't know. Remco's building back.
I don't know. I don't think, I think it's deep. I think this goes deeper than just GCM Plus. I think there is something, yeah, that's just, it's gone a bit stale.
Mm.
I definitely hear you. And to be honest, like when the Giro first came on, I almost had to force myself to watch some of that content. And I know sometimes like
– maybe it's just me because I'm
– true. You've got
a busy stuff. Like, I don't have as much time to just browse pro cycling. So maybe it's that, but I don't know. Are other people –
normally you would get into the like the side stories. Like normally you would pop something in the notes that I hadn't seen that was like, oh, did you see this guy was – suspended for that. Like there's little side stories that get you going, but you're just not even
I'm not. Yeah. But it's not like I'm not aware. I'm still actually see, you know, I'm still on Twitter, still seeing. It's just nothing. It's just Giro's on. And, yeah. Kind of annoying. I'm usually
normally I can drag something out of you.
Out, you know, something. I just.
All right, fair enough. Now, speaking of things you have absolutely no interest in, Jesse Coyle. Take a deep breath. I'm going to go to a gravel race this weekend. And he's asleep.
And
he is asleep. So can I? Yeah, so I'm going to go do a gravel race. I'm going to do my first gravel race.
And it's not a gravel fondo. This is a UCI qualifying, basically elite gravel race.
Yes.
In Western Australia. Yep.
And I am going to do the elites just because, well, why not? And also, yeah, so this is over in WA. It's in Perth, which is not very close to Sydney for those of you who don't live in Australia. It's about a five-hour flight, et cetera, and then a 3 or 4 hour drive south from there. But I don't know. So I don't really know what to say here because I've never done this before. I have a bike that I'm going to ride, which I was given an opportunity to ride for this. This is the new Cervelo Aspero. I'm really not nervous about this, not the performance of it or anything like that, but there just seems to be, because maybe it's just the first one I've done, that there's just so many logistical hurdles and everything that you go through to do this. It just seems more than a normal event, and I could still be out of my depth if I got my logistics. Like I think about something like, don't fall asleep. This is the cue for you to fall asleep. But I have tires that are on my bike and he's gone. I have 45 mil Pirelli tires, okay? But if it rains, like it becomes like unbound slop fest. Like what's my day? My day is like some sort of hiker bikey thing and then what, like mud gets stuck in my derailleur and the derailleur snaps off after 20 minutes and look, I know I could be in a crash in a road race in just as much, but there seems to be less, it does. There's just less mechanicals and shit that can happen in these sort of events. So I don't know, coming into this, because I've invested money and time in flying entirely across the country to go do this. This was always my biggest hesitation to do these events was the amount of logistics and everything around it. So I don't know, I'm saying this to you now because I hope to come back next week and say, oh no, that was completely unfounded. It's actually, once you get on the start line, it's fine. Everyone's just on the same page and blah, blah, blah. It's a good hard race, et cetera. So I don't know. That's my watch this space position. I know you have no interest in the equipment side of it.
But when you start
like
talking about gravel equipment, this is kind of what happens in my brain. This is like you going to do a half marathon and talking about the Vaporflies versus the Hokas. I don't care. I don't care what gravel tires you're running. I don't care what your gravel gearing is. I can't even just, I just, it doesn't, it's, I'm not there yet.
See,
I'm
I think
just, it's like a cult. The only people that care is the other people that do gravel. But that's the problem. Because if everyone's doing gravel and then you're here ready to talk about your tires and the 50,000 people listening are all waiting to hear about your tires and I'm here going, fuck, he's talking about gravel tires again, then I'm going to have to.
You're going to have
to. I hope that most people are in my camp. But, you know, give me 15 minutes on your Cervelo S5. I'm on the edge of my seat. Give me 15 minutes on your Cervelo Aspero and I'm going, Oh my god!
Tire clearance.
Oh, I was going to run the Panaraces, and then I saw Trekkie had the Maxxis. Oh my god!
But surely you have. Are you coaching people that are doing gravel racing?
I'm coaching someone who's doing literally that race.
All right,
Gravel Nationals.
Yep,
100%.
Okay,
they want to talk about tires with me, I say, I'm not your man. So that's, you know, obviously you can still train for it, but yeah, the gear stuff, but because that's what, you know, what is the chat if you're doing a gravel race?
It's tire chat.
It's all gear like the quality of the gravel.
Yeah. Well, there's still, no, I still would have had nutrition chat with you. That's a thing.
I could still do that, yeah.
Because I'm still not sure. So
I can still do tactical chat.
Yes.
I'd be here, yeah.
Don't try and follow Trekkie on downhills. Yeah.
I could stick through that.
Wait, so my nutrition, but the nutrition chat, see, maybe this is going to bore you because the nutrition chat gets into the logistics of it because how am I going to carry the shit? Because my initial thing was like, I'll just run my sugar flask. Mm-hmm. But like to get the sugar flask and to actually eat it normally, I have to probably take my hands off the bars. That's what I'm used to doing. Like I go in here, I pick it out, I have my sugar flask, I put it back in here. I'm imagining I'm not doing a lot of that in a gravel race.
No, I'm here for this. Okay, so there's a feed zone, but it's a Grand Fondo pull-in feed zone. There's no Soigneur side of the road feeding.
Okay.
So it'll take you about 4.5 hours, maybe a little longer. But you're going to have to finish with what you started with because you're hardly going to pull into the feed zone.
Yeah.
So, and it's.
Oh, you don't think I'll pull into a feed zone? Well, even if it's just a splash and dash?
Not if you're racing.
Okay.
No. And it's not going to be that hot. The forecast was low 20s.
Yeah.
4.5 hours. If you run 2 800 or 900 milliliter bottles.
Yep.
And do what we did at that Snowy Classic, which is have a starter bottle.
Yep.
For the first 45 minutes, you'll have enough fluid to get through, without a hydration pack. And then because you're not refilling any of your bottles, you can have all your carbs distributed amongst the three bottles, and skip the flask.
I see.
So you'd have. Yeah, your sugar in the two bottles plus the starter bottle that you'll have to make sure. But if you're running the Nero suit, you won't have space for the starter bottle because it only got two lower cut rear pockets that won't fit a bottle.
I put it down my neck.
Put it down the back of the – yeah, could do that. Might be a bit fiddly to get it back under there though. That's what you're going to be – was that what you were planning, three bottle?
Well, I was planning two bottles with the sugar flask.
Yeah.
That was actually –
It's very borderline. Like you'll be pretty dehydrated by the end. So you want to go three bottles. So a small hydro pack. So what we're talking about is doing a smaller, sort of 500 ml bottle that you're just carrying on you, so that you're not actually touching your two main bottles until about an hour in. That'll get you to the finish line. The thing is, your question is, where are you going to store that bottle? Because it's not going to fit in your pockets.
Which brings in the hydro pack option. But then, is that just a ball like to carry the whole time?
Then you got the discomfort of it.
So I must admit, I really did think the splash and dash was an option there, that it was a.
If you went into it relying on the fact you were going to have to stop, and you're in a pack of six, and they just go, "Yep, fuck you, you're gone."
Yeah, of course,
you are done. So you should plan.
All right, well, we'll see how it goes this weekend. 7. Hopefully, I get more than 10 km without getting mechanical or anything like that. So, but if you are in Perth, give us a shout. Let me know. I'll be slopping about the place.
Mm-hmm. So you've done a few rides on this new gravel bike you've got. And then you called me the other day and you're thinking, Jesse, the one bike to rule them all, it's back. I'm sold on it again. So can you walk us through this? Because this is another Chris Miller leading us down the garden path, as he did with the one buy, which he then didn't use once he sold us all on it. So come on, what's happened? You've done a couple of rides on your on your new Cervelo fancy gravel bike, and now it's, I could probably do a crit on this.
Yep. All right. How am I gonna sell this to you? Let's try. All right. So here's my thinking, Jesse Cook. Now that I'm in this, I've had my world expanded. Because I'm now looking at riding bikes through the Frederico narrative of just feeling. I'm just purely feeling now, Jesse. I don't worry about Strava segments. It's just the sensations. That's what I'm basing all my riding on. Sensations.
Okay.
Okay. So I get on this bike, and it's very, very comfortable. Very, very, and I was expecting to be comfortable. Like I've got 40 mil tires on it, or 45 mil tires on it originally,
mm-hmm.
and riding around going, wow, this is like riding on a pillow. My feeling is just stability and enjoyment riding this bike. I can see where this is placed, etc. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna put some slicks on this and ride it for a day and see what I think then. I get on it.
Did you do that?
Yep.
What wheels did you put on?
Put those on.
Oh my god. All
right. So I went out and I'm like riding around. I'm like,
okay.
It's still comfortable.
Yeah.
The bike's still comfortable. Not a lot has actually changed here. Again, feeling. I'm not looking at numbers. Just you and your numbers, you worry about all that stuff. I'm just so sort of out there now. And I hadn't ridden a bike that was that comfortable. I hadn't ridden a disc brake bike, I should point out, that was that comfortable purely. And so I did. That's when I made the call to you. I'm like, Jesse, I think it's back.
Okay.
I think it's back.
Right.
Because, and not specifically this, I mean, I'm not going to sell the Aspero gravel bike as the one bike to rule them all to people. But I do think that there is a person out there who would enjoy the experience of riding a bike like this because not because it's so capable. I get that. I've always got the idea that, oh, I can put road tires on. I get that. But there's an actual... The actual feeling of riding the bike is actually quite enjoyable.
So capable. You got to get a job at a bike magazine. That's straight out of the Cycling Weekly book.
Capability.
It's extremely capable.
Yes.
5 out of 5.
Yeah.
Okay. But you said if there was one of these run club people, these sort of second year corporate types looking to get into road cycling, that you'd tell them to get a do-it-all bike. You'd sell them this based on your ride. Do you stand by that?
Yeah. All right. Let's do this. Let's do this. Yes. I think I would. I think I would.
No. No. So that's – that's.
I think the run clubber. So the okay, so I'll let you go. I'll let you go.
So you would get this as a starter bike. Do it all. Oh, cool, because I can do it. I can do all this and I can – it's capable. So capable. It's extremely capable. It's highly capable. A maximum capabilities. And you'd ride it for a month. Couple club rides, rides with your mates. Cool. It's all good. Right? You go and do one criterium. You get back.
Crits are dead, mate.
Okay, well, crits are dead. Well, let's say you were some weirdo, went and did a criterium. Get back. What's the first thing they're going to be doing? Aero bike. Race bike. So the one bike to do it all is basically one bike for 3 months in anyone that's remotely competitive. And then it's your redundant rain bike when you actually get your proper specialist bike at what you want to be good at. Or maybe it's, yeah, you're on your one bike to do it all. You're going up and doing lots of hilly club rides, the hill ride, and you're going, actually, I don't really want to be dragging around 7.5 kilos. Giant TCR, climbing bike, stiffness to weight, bang. So your one bike to do it all is your cobweb bike, because you're probably then upgrading 90% of the time to a more specialist bike. And that's – so it's actually costing you money in the long run.
Classic elitist racer chat. Just absolute diarrhea of elite racer chat coming out there. The run clubber Jesse Coyle is not going to do a criterium. The run clubber's about the vibe and the scene. They're not doing that stuff because that stuff fucking hurts. So the run clubber wants a nice, pillowy, comfortable bike ride across the terrain. Probably isn't going to do gravel, I will give you that. But the feeling that they're going to get riding this bike, I think, would be like a really nice. What is it, Hoco? What's the – and because they're all going to bloody come off knee injuries and shin splints because they've all decided to realize that running 20 or 30K a week actually destroys your knees. So they're going to need something quite sort of toned back and relaxed geometry because none of them can actually bend anymore.
Yeah.
I just don't think – I think we're overselling the competitive nature of it. I wish you were right. I just feel like, no, actually just coming back to the actual feeling of riding that bike is not as shit as I initially thought it was going to be. The sloppiness, I was really expecting just sloppy mud-like feelings riding these bikes. It's hasn't been that for me.
Okay.
Speaking of one by, I realized that I have died on that hill, and I'm willing to continue dying on that hill just for the sake of dying on that hill. And yet the gravel bike, which should actually have one by on it, has two by on it. That's not by design. That's all I could get my hands on circumstance. So yes, I would love a one by on that. And I should point out, like with the one bike to rule it all thing, that the thing that shit us the most when that original thing came out was it wasn't the fact that people could get one bike and it could do lots of things. It was the fact that it won the bike of the year. It was like you just created a bike that was kind of not very good at anything and therefore it wins bike of the year. No, that's not good enough. That's what got me up about it in the first place. I don't think bikes that can do lots of things okay are a design wonderment. They're fine, but like let's not get too excited about it.
Yes, that was also my grab. I think the one bike to do all is just a money pit.
Yeah,
who is the one bike to do it all that actually just keeps one bike?
Who?
Yeah, maybe some like 60-year-old that just refuses to buy any new bike. But where are these one bikers that are out doing this diverse range of riding competitively? They're unicorns.
Yes. And that is, I don't disagree with you on that. My just take with this was just like for an another way to come into the sport, I didn't think this was that bad, I think was where I was headed with that ultimately. Not a gravel bike as such.
I think it is. I think you'd be better off getting a super specialized bike. Come in and just buy a System 6 super aero bike. Well, at least you'll use it on a fast run down to La Par because you want to run an aero bike. And then eventually you'll go, oh, actually, this isn't really doing everything I want. And then you'll buy a climbing bike. So then you've got two. If you buy a do-it-all bike, there's then two other bikes you're going to want, aren't you?
You're potentially
right. I mean, it depends on what level you're, yeah.
Nah, you're potentially right. Yeah. I mean, if you just got some absolute speed machine first out, like you just get that thrill of speed and who cares about anything else? Like comfort, who cares? I can't feel my knees. They're blown out from 3 months of running. So.
And the thing is, because with a do-it-all bike, the point is it can also do light off-road. That's the selling point. But if you're doing light off-road, it's just slopping around anyway. You could get any shitty secondhand bike with wide tire clearance and just go and bash about on that. It doesn't need to be a good bike. So I don't think it makes sense to buy a competitive mid to upper level do-it-all bike, which then becomes a just do-nothing bike.
Yeah.
As a first bike. Anyway.
I will say the big loser in this Chris is riding for feeling world is that lightweight road bike. The ones that I've only ridden the R5, which doesn't have the drop seat stays, it's just not a very comfortable bike for a bike that should be more comfortable. Like it's obviously it is slightly more comfortable than the S5, but whatever, like the trade-off's 3 kilometers an hour, potentially even more. And I'm willing to do that trade-off for the speed of the S5. Whereas just that lightweight climbing bike, even when I compared it to just jumping on the Aspera, riding the Aspera was so much more enjoyable from just an all-round riding experience and then a lightweight climbing bike. Even the feeling, the little snappiness, you've got to do that. When you do snappy, yes. You've got to click your fingers. That's the rule. Even the feeling of that was still there in the Aspera because it was kind of a shorter front end. So you're adding a bit of weight, but it didn't feel like that. And that's all that matters, just feeling.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like that was, I think that's what originally got me thinking down that path was like, oh shit, this actually compares quite well to that bike. Well, I've got you obsessed with off-road stuff. So I put a little thing up during the week where I was talking about why I've So I decided to run off-road shoes for gravel racing because I'm a hubbard. I'm going to put my foot down. That's going to happen. And then I'll get mud stuck in it with road shoes and blah, blah, blah. I don't want to do that. So I wanted to run mountain bike cleats with mountain bike shoes. So I was like, okay, but I'm still doing a gravel race. So I don't want to run like slop mountain bike shoes. What were the stiffest road shoes I'd ever ridden? They were Bonts. So, Bont, do a gravel shoe. Sweet. I'll get Bont gravel shoes. Perfect. Put them on. Stiff, feel like race shoes, happy days. And I put a thing on Instagram saying, that exact story. Like, I went and got stiff mountain bike shoes. And someone replied back saying, well, yeah, but aren't all the shoes stiff? Like, aren't all the, because they all have the same sort of or similar level of plate to the base of them. Like, what are you talking about, the stiffest ones you've ever ridden? Can you explain it any better than me? I mean,
are they stiffer?
That's the point. Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like I didn't notice any increase in flex going to my Rafa shoes, which have a carbon sole, versus any other shoes I've used, including the Bonts. I think of any of the top level shoes using a full carbon sole. What's the deflection under a certain amount of force? You'd have to think that they're all as stiff enough where you're not noticing the difference.
So in my roadie head, right, so because you have your road pedals and they're wider platforms, okay, so you've got these nice wide platforms, so all this power is evenly kind of, what's the word, like sort of distributed out across the pedal, across the sole. So then I'm getting on these mountain bike ones which have the smaller little cleat on them, so it's a more direct power that's going down. So my theory then was that I would get a shoe that had lots of like carbon and stiffness to somehow disperse the power going down across a wider platform, and therefore it would feel ultimately more like a road shoe, and that would therefore be something that I like. I don't know if any of that has any scientific validation.
There's probably a It wouldn't be hard to test shoe stiffnesses. You just put them in a jig and put a force on a certain part of the shoe and measure the deflection. I'm sure it'd be someone would have tested it.
I do reckon with the Bonts though, like my feeling of them being stiff, because they do come like the carbon comes up the sole, up the sides quite far.
Yeah.
And then like the top is so stiff, like the whole thing makes you feel like, oh, this must be a performance shoe now because it's like this.
One of the reasons why Bonts in particular feel stiffer is the carbon sole wraps up around the inside of the foot under the arch.
Correct.
So usually on a regular shoe, you'll have the carbon sole, but that doesn't cover the ankle portion. And so, yeah, you could have a super stiff sole, but the actual shoe's collapsing on the inside where the ankle is. So, okay, some people use like an orthotic or an insert, and that is stiff, and that'll add rigidity to press against. But any shoe that's got the sole coming further up the inside, you will feel like it's stiffer, even though the actual stiffness of the bottom part is similar.
Anyway, I thought it was a good question. So not that we answered it, but
no,
I just wanted to actually
talk
about.
Well, that goes down a whole other thing, is stiffer better?
Yeah.
Do you want to have 2 mil of deflection under 50 newtons of force? Or do you want no deflection?
Hmm.
I don't know.
someone needs to do that study.
I'm sure they know. I don't know.
All right. So, yeah, I'm going to be in Perth this weekend, Jesse.
I'm going to be at home.
You're going to be at home.
Waterloo.
Yep. Live results will be on 7.com or whatever it is. Keep an eye out. Say hello if you do see us over there. I will be sniffing around the place. Until next week, Jesse. I will see you then.
See you next week.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays.
Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.